Okay, I'm going to describe some experiments that were done in flow between concentric rotating cylinders. The inner cylinder is rotating, the outer cylinder is at rest. This work was done by two graduate students, Greg Lewis, Dan Lathrop, both very good with instrumentation, and it's published. The work of Lathrop was published earlier in 92, and then Greg Lewis's paper has just appeared. This is a system with a radius ratio of the inner to the outer radius of 0.72, and experiments were done for two different heights of the cylinder aspect ratios. The original plan was to go up to very high Reynolds numbers, several million or even higher. The cylinder was balanced, inner cylinder was balanced to go to 10,000 RPM, but the maximum Reynolds number we can achieve is about 1 million, slightly higher, and that's set by the Joule heating of the fluid, which is 2 kilowatts at the maximum speed, and that scales roughly as the cube of the cylinder rotation rate to go to Reynolds number of 10 million, then would require 2 megawatts of motor power and also refrigeration. So the system looks like this. Measurements were done, just simple flow visualization. The main measurements were torque and velocity measurements. Torque is measured on a central section here, which is independent from the end pieces because of the problems with end effects, Ekman pumping at the ends. And in addition, we made some measurements of the wall shear stress with probes, which were embedded in the outer wall. The original idea for this experiment goes back nearly two decades when we thought we'd measure the torque as a function of Reynolds number and find some scaling law. Scaling law is being a very popular thing to determine. We determine the scaling law for the torque as a function of Reynolds number analogous to the measurements of heat flux or the Nusselt number as a function of Rayleigh number and Redvenard convection. Simple argument gives you this scaling law, assuming we have some thin boundary layers with a well-mixed turbulent core with constant angular momentum density. You're left with three parameters that are the thickness of each of the boundary layers and the mean angular momentum. And you can solve these three equations just taking from Chandra-Sekhar this relationship for the marginally stable boundary layer. And you get the torque should scale as the Reynolds number to the 5/3 power. The first measurements were done, and we obtained something that looked somewhat like that. These were measurements of Dan Lathrop. This is the torque as a function. This is the log of the torque as a function of Reynolds number. And you can see the points fall on the smooth curve. And if you take a ruler, you can draw a pretty good straight line through different portions of the curve. Actually, over the whole curve, it's not bad for above Reynolds number of 1,000 or so. You can draw a straight line, but looking more closely, it looked like maybe it was a region with some smaller exponent and then a larger value, and then at very high Reynolds number, yet higher value. And in an analogy with what was being seen at the time with the Redvenard convection, so maybe this is soft turbulence and this is hard turbulence, and that's asymptotic turbulence. Measurements were gradually improved, and these are the most recent measurements, which have very high precision, over 4 orders of magnitude in the torque. The reproducibility is 0.1%. It's really remarkable work, I think, that Greg Lewis did in obtaining these data. The accuracy is a little larger. A little worse because of the uncertainty in the fluid viscosity. That's the limiting factor. There are 6 different fluids that were used to span this range in Reynolds number, but the scatter is really too small to see here. This is dimensionless torque, so the kinematic viscosity comes in here. Now, you can fit a pretty good straight line to these data and get a scaling law. That's not bad. Over a large range of the data, it fits a straight line. And you get something, and we were looking for the 5/3. It doesn't fit 5/3. But rather than doing a fit to a straight line, the data are sufficiently precise that one can take the derivative locally and look at the slope as the Reynolds number increases. So taking the local slope, you find that the exponent, the scaling, is not a constant anywhere in the Reynolds number range. It's increasing as you go up in Reynolds number. There's a break here at a Reynolds number of 13,000 in this change in the value of the exponent. I mean, there is no scaling. There is no range in R in which there's a fixed alpha, so it's not really an exponent, but we can speak of one locally. And that break happens to be at the value we originally expected of 5/3 for the exponent. Whether it's fortuitous or whether it's means something, we have no idea. But it seems to just continue up, and the dependence of this exponent on Reynolds number appears to be roughly linear, going up to the highest Reynolds numbers studied. So we see there's no scaling region, and there is this transition at Reynolds number 13,000. Now that's observed in the torque, which is a globally averaged measurement. We've also done more recently some local velocity measurements and wall shear stress data, and they also show that this transition occurs at a Reynolds number of 13,000. And maybe we're not clear what the transition corresponds to, but perhaps it's a point where the boundary layer becomes turbulent. But it's apparent in all the measurements that have been made. Now, the exponent is creeping up here, and you wonder how large could it be. We had discussions with various people about that, including Charles During and Peter Constantin, and they did an analysis from the Navier-Stokes equation and found that there is a rigorous bound on the exponent, which is 2. And the largest value we determined was 1.9. Now, if you take these data for the exponent as functional Reynolds number and just extrapolate this straight line, of course, that's a very dangerous thing to do, but suppose one did that, just to get an idea of how high in Reynolds number you'd have to go to see if you reach this value of 2, if the exponent continued to behave in the same way as functional Reynolds number, you'd reach that about a Reynolds number of 300 million, more than 2 orders of magnitude, higher Reynolds number than we can achieve in our experiments. But the upper bound could be lower than 2. This is a bound, not the value that it necessarily takes. It could be 1.9. Who knows what it might be. Now, if you take this picture that I showed earlier with two boundary layers with in a core that is well mixed, then you can, if you assume that the boundary layers are logarithmic, you can obtain an expression for the skin friction coefficient and relate it to the torque here and invert that and get an expression for the effective exponent as a function of Reynolds number. And there's just one adjustable parameter here, this m over n ratio in the skin friction law. The result is that the actual value, this fan is blowing everything, okay, of the torque exponent follows this Prandtl von Karman skin friction law pretty well. Of course, it's one adjustable constant, but there is some systematic variation, but it's not bad. And this leads to a result for the von Karman constant, which is not so different from that obtained in various turbulent fluids. You can actually look at the magnitude of the skin friction coefficient for this Couette-Taylor flow, and it looks similar in its behavior to that found for other fluids. This is for pipe flow. Here's our experiment on top. Here's pipe flow. Here's flow of a flat plate, the skin friction coefficient. And of course, you can shift them up and down a little depending upon how you define skin friction, what your area is here. But the general behavior looks similar. Now, recently, Losa and Grossman said it might be possible to fit torque data versus Rayleigh number in terms not of a single scaling exponent, but some scaling exponent at plus another term with a different scaling exponent. And Losa just sent me this curve a couple weeks ago of assuming or trying this fit where you have two terms to the torque, one going as the 3/2 power and one is the square. And you can see the fit is not too bad, but there is some systematic deviation. I don't think that's the appropriate fit to make, because I would try it with a 5/3, and I wrote him suggesting that. And who knows whether it's really at large Reynolds numbers going as r squared or maybe r to the 1.9 or 1.95, whatever. Power of 2 is the upper bound. But and gives what are you saying that it gives? Okay, well, I just showed the comparison with the log layer. And there's some systematic deviation. Not much, but some. Okay, there are a number of things one could do. I have CD-ROMs with the data. I'd be happy to give them to anybody. I would like people to try things. Yes. So, and we'll try other things too. Okay, so we look at the data now at a Reynolds number of 500,000. Look at the velocity power spectrum to see if we have a region in which this is the power spectrum versus frequency, in which the slope is constant and equal to minus 5/3. Here's the slope plotted for the data at Reynolds number of 540,000. And you see there's no range where the slope is constant. There's no inertial range. Turbulent intensity here is about 6%. This is a velocity measurement made at the midway between the inner and the outer cylinder, mid-gap. And it's made at different heights, and it doesn't seem to matter where you measure it with respect to the vortex boundaries. But it's in the mid-gap. With a hot film probe, yes. Yes. Okay. I'm going to come back to it. Okay. Now we can look at the PDF of the velocity increments, the U measured at some position x plus L minus U of x. If we add scaling, it should go as the distance between these two points. This is a longitudinal velocity component. Raised to the p power, so it's the pth order structure factor should go as L to the exponent zeta sub p, and this just shows the actual probability distribution function of these fluctuations, and we could determine this zeta p from the plots of the structure function versus log plots of structure function versus the length scale, and of course the Komarov values would be just p divided by 3. Now we find, given the results I've already shown for the velocity data, that again there is no scaling. If you plot the structure function here as a function of length scale for different values of p, 1, 2, so forth, there is no scaling region. There's no region in which on this log plot you get a straight line. The U is in the azimuthal directions, the azimuthal component of the velocity. The L is in that direction azimuthally. No, I haven't done it in using the Taylor hypothesis, right, assuming Taylor's frozen turbulence hypothesis. We have not checked the radial component. Okay? Now, this is a problem often in turbulent measurements, and it was realized, as I guess people are aware, the work of Benzie and all, that something which they call the extended self-similarity hypothesis, instead of plotting the pth order structure factor versus L, you can plot it versus the third order structure factor, and then get the ratio of the exponents. And in fact, even though we have no indication of scaling, no inertial range, you plot it in this way, you get very nice straight lines all the way up to the 10th order structure factor. So we can get the slope of these now is the exponent zeta sub p, the structure factor exponent. Using this trick, what is that? It gives you a number, okay? It gives you a number, all right? You can name it what you like. It's very surprising to me that these data are clearly for a turbulent flow. If you look at the flow visually, or you look at it's highly turbulent, and so it's not so surprising that you can't get a straight line. But that's a Reynolds number of 500,000. But even when you go down and look at a flow which looks highly ordered, has waves traveling around the annulus, you see these waves, you look at the velocity spectrum, there's a couple frequency components corresponding to the wave frequency and the modulation frequency of those waves, two strong spectral components that are incommensurate, plus a little bit of background noise, but really looks very ordered. Even in that situation, a Reynolds number only 12,000, you get these nice straight lines up to 10th order. What is that? That's absolute values. Yes. This is Mark's question is, yes, these are absolute values here. That's right. We can measure without the absolute value, and without the absolute value, we get the same result, but with more noise. So we just throw all the data together for better statistics. Yes? How do you know the flow is turbulent? Well, the definition of turbulence was given in the previous talk, so I don't think I need to go into that. Okay. No, the Coriolis forces are not a big issue here. No. This is strongly 3D. It is not isotropic. It's not isotropic, that's true. Okay, now, one can even do better in estimating these structure factors by smoothing the probability distribution functions, and this has been done by Chintu Sha, who's here and who made this graph. So there are two points to be made about this graph. One is the data are smooth, and the second is there's some sample size dependence. So first, this is the original data which I showed earlier without the smoothing, and now with some systematic smoothing, you get this. So it's these data just for two different length scales, but it's these data that have been smoothed here. The second point is that you can look at the effect of varying data record lengths. So we have a record length here of 20 million points. That's the full sample. And with more samples, you can go further down, of course, into the tails of the probability distribution function. With 1/10 as many points, you can only go this far. Because once you get below a certain level where there are only a few points, then you have to cut off the distribution function. And the cutoff you made was 5 points or fewer. So with more points, you can go out further in the distribution function. And the effect of this smoothing is seen. So here is just an example how you can, whether you believe this, you get a number, okay, in ITMAR, it's just a number, all right? Whether you believe the number or not, you can get smooth lines here with the smooth PDFs, even up for the 18th order probability, the structure function. 18th order here. The unsmooth data give this jagged result, but by smoothing the data, you can go up to very high order structure functions and get an answer. Here it's 3.57, whatever it means, you get an answer. On Thursday, he's going to talk for 30 minutes about the procedure. Okay? But the answer, yeah. Okay. The answer is he's done his homework. All right. Now, what about sample size dependence? They've been plotted in a number of different ways. Okay, but this is looking at the effect of sample size. So with 1/10 of the total data set, you get this is the structure function versus the order of the structure function exponent versus order. You get this set of points, and you can take different 1/10 samples, and the results reproduce exactly. I mean, within the scatter that can be seen here. Pardon? P equal 3 is... So you can see with increasing number of data, the actual values drop a bit, but it appears to be, and this will be discussed on Thursday in Shay's talk, but it appears to be pretty close to convergent with the data set that we have with 20 million points, the full data set. Maybe not quite converged, but pretty close at that with that large of a data set. Is there a Reynolds number dependence? No, not very strong, if any. I mean, even down at Reynolds number 12,000, value is pretty close to the same. Okay. So here's comparison results from different experiments. This is an experiment that I guess Patrick Tabling will be discussing later this week. Here is the Couette experiment I've just discussed. This is looking now at just particular p equal, this is 12th order structure function exponent. And if you go from these closed systems, Tabling system is closed as is our, to an open system, the values seem somewhat larger. And for the theory, the calculations of Shea, the open system in the limit of large Reynolds number gives a value 2/3 to the 2/3 power, which is 1/9. For beta, oh, I haven't talked about that yet, but this is the theory in that limit right there. For open systems, so closed systems seem to give somewhat smaller value, presumably because of the existence of structures in them, than these open systems, but that's just conjecture. I'm not doing any time. I'm about done? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. I'll stop. I'll skip some things. Okay. Now, in this hierarchical structure model that Shea and Levesque have, you can compute a couple quantities which are called beta and gamma. These are properties of the system, and this quantity beta is a measure of intermittency. In the absence of intermittency, it has the value 1. If intermittency dominates, it has the value 0. For isotropic turbulence, they predict 0.874. And here's how you determine this. This is the ratio of the p plus first to the pth order. And the assumption in the model is that there's this relationship. So if you plot this quantity, the hypothesis will be satisfied if the result is a straight line. If the result is a straight line, the slope will give this parameter beta. Our data give a straight line. Okay, even at rather small Reynolds numbers. This is going up in Reynolds numbers, but in every case, you get the straight line. So these data satisfy the beta test of the hierarchical structure model. And the value of the exponent of beta, rather, is 0.83. So for isotropic turbulence, it's 0.87. So it's not far. Now there's another quantity which measures how singular the most intermittent structure is. And this is discussed in a number of papers that will be discussed on Thursday. But in this model, you have this ratio of structure functions varies as L to this power gamma. And if this plot gives a straight line, then that hypothesis is satisfied, and the slope is the value gamma. For turbulent flow behind the cylinder, far in the wake of the cylinder, you get gamma equals 0.11. And for K41, you get a third. In our experiments, we get 0.11. Tabling's experiments give 0.045. And here is the evidence for this value of gamma from the experiments. So I said 0.11, but that's at large Reynolds numbers. At smaller Reynolds numbers, it's 0.14 up to around 100,000 Reynolds number, and then it drops to 0.11 at larger Reynolds numbers. So this quantity, which is given by the theory, the experiment supports the model in that these are straight lines, and the slope is the value of gamma. In this case, it's about 0.11 for Reynolds numbers greater than 100,000. What happens to change things at Reynolds number 100,000? We've done flow visualization measurements, and below 100,000 Reynolds number, we can see tail of vortices. This is not near 100,000. This is only 7,600. But you can still see that there is an axial periodic structure corresponding to the boundaries of the tail of vortices. You can see those up to a Reynolds number about 100,000. Above 100,000, instead of having a donut that goes all the way around the cylinder, they pinch off, and they're moving all around vertically, and they're just little sausages. So at 100,000, you can see visually something has happened, and this gamma parameter changes. Whether there's any correlation between those two or that's a fortuitous correspondence, I don't know. So let me conclude. All right. So we see in the measurements of torque and velocity and wall shear stress is some transition at 13,000 that had not been previously observed. In attempts to measure a well-defined critical exponent, alpha, we find the data incompatible with a single value of alpha. There is no scaling. We looked at the structure factor exponents. We find that the actual values we obtain are like those, or similar in magnitude to those obtained in other experiments. And we've applied this the test, the beta test and gamma test of the hierarchical structure model of Shea and Levesque, and found values that are reasonable, that is, similar to those found for other turbulent flows. Thank you very much. But it has two, that particular parameter, which measures something about the most singular structure in the flow. That parameter changes at a Reynolds number of about 100,000. It changes a little bit. Whether that's significant or not, I don't know. Yes, Shay. Okay, right. But there still is clear scaling below 100K. If you use ESS, which I found... Pardon? It's a little bit different, yes. It's not a whole lot different, but there are two sets. A Taylor Reynolds number, yeah, it's small. It's data at 540K, I think it's 290. Our lambda is 290. It's small. It's not big. Yes? But the only four, I mean. Now, there are large traveling waves on the tail of vortices at large Reynolds numbers, at low Reynolds numbers. Okay? As you go up in Reynolds numbers, the amplitude of those waves decay, and you reach a Reynolds number where you can't see any traveling waves anymore. So there are structures. These large traveling waves are present at low Reynolds numbers. But as you go up here at a Reynolds number, I was talking 500 to a million or so Reynolds number, we don't see visually waves. We see no waves indicated by strong peaks in the power spectra. And we see no well-defined tail vortices above 100,000 Reynolds number. And we have a turbulent intensity of typically 6 to 7%. Yes, Russ? It's easier to rotate the inner cylinder. We could make a very precise inner cylinder which had a runout of only about 3-4 microns. It was precision ground, very, very nice, really well balanced inner cylinder, and we could rotate the heck out of it.
Well, the reason I say that is there's been a long history of New Atlantis that is very turbulent with rotating the inner cylinder.
Yes. Yes. So we had planned to do the corresponding experiment, rotating the outer cylinder. That was an experiment that David Tritton was going to do when he had his heart attack and died in May last year. Yeah. Yeah, it's a good experiment. It would be one we'd like to do. I didn't hear the first part. Okay.
The higher is the is the part of the sacrifice which is executed by non-isotropic pressures.
Okay, yeah.
Isotropic distribution don't start increasing with M. And by, when you go to M equals 6, 7, 8, or 60-70% of the amplitude of the sacrifice is executed by non-isotropic pressures, so the exponent above the type 2 effect of the isotopic vector. So I would put a big question mark on the universal value of the exponent CFS or not.
Okay. Okay. We realize that. And it's important to have measurements at more than one spatial point and multiple components at a given spatial point. That experiment is being assembled now. The actual apparatus is the same apparatus. Dan Lathrop, who did these experiments, is now a professor at Maryland, University of Maryland. And he has taken the whole apparatus and he's refining it, putting in more diagnostic measurements. He's going to have multi-point measurements and multi-wire probes to get more than one velocity component. Yeah, we know that. Yeah, okay. Did very, first of all, the frequencies aren't that high. I mean, we calibrated with a pitot tube to know what the mean velocities were. We made range measurements with pitot tubes to calibrate. To get the means, and no, I realize it's not the full answer. I'm saying we looked at the frequency response. We put in square wave. We did a number of things. I don't know if we'll satisfy you completely. Well, we worried about a number of things. I'm not sure we worried about enough things. The experiment that is being set up to repeat this with better instrumentation is being done with Jim Wallace, who knows a lot about hot film probes, and he's doing that work with Dan Lathrop at University of Maryland. So if some of this turns out, maybe it's not. Okay. Okay.
So one last question, okay?